in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a discussion of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. Now, Swayambhuva Manu had two sons. The elder was named Priyavrata, and the younger one is named Uttanapada. The descendants of Priyavrata, who Priyavrata didn't wish to become the king, rather he liked to perform austerities and take the spiritual life. He didn't want to get entangled in kingly work because of, anyway, it's explained in the fifth canto. His descendants are explained. His story, wonderful, wonderful pastime of Priyavrata described in the first chapter of the fifth canto. But here, in the fourth chapter, the sons, the descendants of the fourth canto, the descendants of the younger son, his name was Uttana, are described. And especially, or specifically, Maitreya Muni, who is speaking here, he wished to describe the descendants of Uttanapada, because in that family, the great devotee Dhruva Maharaj was born. And he was very, of course, everyone was very young. But he took to his devotional service in such an incredible way when he was just perhaps 5 years old. And he reached perfection so quickly. Let us hear something about Dhruva Maharaj. Now, the pastime begins, practically speaking, in the eighth chapter, where it describes in the eighth verse, Jaye Uttanapadasya Suniti Surichitayor Suruchi Prayasi Patyor. King Uttanapad had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. And which one was the favorite? Suruchi Prayasi. She was dear to Uttanapad, the Pachi. And Netara Yatsito Dhruva, and not the other wife, she, Suniti, wasn't dear to King Uttanapada, and that Suniti had a son whose name was Dhruva. Now, this first set of verses that we're going to read, this morning's verses, will more or less set the scene for a very powerful boy, as we said, to achieve his perfection. A powerful devotee. No one can do this without having very deep purva sanskars, deep spiritual impressions from previous lives. When we think about where we were born, what our tendencies were when we were even younger, or what they are now, these tendencies, every one of them, the tendencies, this is called karma vasana, they are like seeds in the consciousness that we are born with. Adhisthayam manasayam visha upasevate. We have tendencies that we are born with. And little children, they all look the same, and they all are so innocent. But as they grow, they begin to manifest who they actually are. The seeds, when you throw so many seeds in the ground, it is hard to tell the rose from the marigold from the weed. But after a while, we should be able to tell the roses, the ones with the thorns and the fragrance, and the marigolds are the ones that when you pull the flowers out, they pop. And the weeds are the ones that are growing everywhere. But when there's seeds, before the seeds reveal their true nature, very difficult to tell them apart. But Dhruva, this son of the non-favorite, neglected queen of Uttanapad. He was the son, he was a great devotee. Now one day, it starts, Ekada. Once upon a time, all good stories start once upon a time. Suruchi Putram, the son of Suruchi. Who is the son of Suruchi? We haven't mentioned his name yet. His name was Uttam. Uttam. Ankam Aropya Lalayan. That his father, Uttanapad, was sitting in the court on his throne. And once upon a time, Uttam, he sat on the lap of his father who was sitting on the throne, the king, and his father, Lalayan, he was showing him so much affection and petting him. This was happening with Uttam. Ankam Aropyam Lalayan. So a very, very sweet scene. The boy, his father, the king, and then Uttamam, the Rurukshan Tham, Dhruva, Dhruvam Rajabhyan Bhyantarat Dhatta. When Dhruva naturally wanted to also get up on the lap of his father, because naturally he wanted to also receive some affection from his father, and his brother, Uttam, he was there, so he naturally tried to get up on his father's lap, but the king didn't welcome him. So we think about this as a story in a holy book, but if something like this would happen to us, a deep feeling of rejection for one reason or another, our whole life, our whole self-concept can be changed. When we're older, similar things can happen. Maybe we don't have an opportunity to want to sit on the lap of our father who's the king of the world. But in our life, there are so many traumatic experiences, practically, especially in Kali Yuga, you practically can't go through life without some kind of difficulty or trauma. So difficult in Kali Yuga. Now, when we hear about how Dhruva Maharaj, what happened to Dhruva Maharaj, how something very unfortunate, practically speaking, a traumatic experience for a young boy, a deep rejection, How he turned it around. So this negative became the strongest of all positives. This is something that we should and can learn. We may not be able to perfectly imitate Dhruva Maharaj, because we'll see, even not tomorrow, but tomorrow perhaps we'll hear what he was asked to do and what he actually did on the next day. It's incredible, the austerities that he performed. But here's the seed of the event happening right now. So he was unwelcome, Dhruva was unwelcome, as he tried to climb on the lap of his father. This is text 10 now. While the child, Dhruva Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, who was, what was his relationship? Stepmother. She became very envious. Kanayam Dhruvam. Sapadni, which means which is the stepmother, Suruchi, Srinvato Rajna. The king was right there. Dhruva was right there. Uttama was right there. And Suruchi became very upset. Now, what was the boy trying to do? What was he trying to do? Something very innocent. He wasn't even very thoughtful. He just wanted to climb on the lap of his father. But Tsurushi became envious. She became proud. Because pride and envy are very deeply connected. Because envy, what does envy mean in a simple way? It's anger? Jealous? Okay, what does it mean? What does it mean? Yeah, or someone has something that you want and you don't have it, but you don't want, and they have it, and that's intolerable. So, Rotama Das Thakur compares envy to like a spear in the heart. And just imagine trying to be happy or walking around with a spear in your heart. It's just simply not possible, no matter what else you have. So if one has a tendency to become envious of others, meaning if one has a tendency to wish ill or bad for others because they have something that you don't have, I mean, you're in a very difficult position in this material world because either you have to rid the world of everyone who has something that you don't have, or you're going to suffer. So usually, we try to rid the world of everyone who has something that we don't have, but we don't succeed, so we suffer. Because this is the way the material world is made. It's made to point out our envy, because our ultimate envy comes from, because say if we're envious of one person who has, well, you'll understand with my example where I'm going, who has more cows than us, and he can play the flute better than us, and he's the most beautiful. He's so beautiful, and everyone loves him more than us. And when he dresses, he knows just how to dress. Do you know what I'm speaking about? If you don't know, you know already. Yeah, peacock feather, you know? Flute? Who am I speaking? Yes, it's true. That's where our envy begins. Krishna Bhule Se Jeev. We want to forget Krishna. There's an enmity. And that causes Atta Eva Maya Tare. We have to go to it because we can't make Krishna not exist. Because if he didn't exist, nothing would exist. Because he's the basis of all existence. Mama Anka Teja Sambhava. So instead we need our own universe where we can imagine that we are the ones who are most worthy, the most worthy of everyone's love and all opulence. This is called the world of Maya, or illusion, because we're not. We're tiny. We're insignificant. So Tsurushi, she was proud, and that was the point I was attempting to make. There has to be a pride in the heart, thinking, I deserve, and this person does not. I deserve. There has to be pride. We have to think, in some way, be in a mood of competitor with Krishna, which takes a lot of pride. Because after all, each of us know better than anyone else that, like when Lakshmi Devi was born, how was she born? Churned of the ocean of milk when they were churning the demigods. She was born and she came out with a garland, and she was looking for a suitable husband, and everyone wanted to marry Lakshmi, but I will put it in the present continuous tense. Everyone wants to combine with good fortune. with the goddess of fortune. This is our life, this is our existence, trying to arrange universe so our life combines with good fortune. Everything goes our way, nothing bad happens, nothing ill happens to us. But again, the same point, do we deserve? So Lakshmi went around with her garland, and everyone wanted her, and she said, no, this one has this fault, and this one has this fault, and that one has that fault, and that one has that fault. And she would not combine with anyone until she came to Lord Krishna, Lord Narayana. And then she said, oh, here is the appropriate person. So we think we're very appropriate, and that's pride. And because of the pride, we become envious. So Saruchi was envious of little Dhruva. Now, why was she envious of Dhruva? Because this is the nature of the material world, that we become envious. There's no cause, really. It's not an intellectual thing. Sometimes we can see this person has something specific that we want. Like, I want to be able to hold up a hill, and he can do it, and I can't. That's who I happen to be pointing to over there. Not by chance, there is no chance. But even if there is no reason, the mind invents a reason, and the reason is the deep dissatisfaction in our own heart with who we are, what we have. Because as long as we are on the material level, we're going to be dissatisfied. We have to be dissatisfied, like the fish has to be dissatisfied when he's out of water. So we keep making our plans and trying to combine the elements of the material energy so that fortune always favors us and misfortune never visits us, so that we can find the deep satisfaction that we are longing for. But we don't ever find it. We're looking in the wrong place. So Saruchi somehow was envious of this little boy, Dhruva, her stepson. And with great pride, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. Now, that's an example of what she's going to say right in front of the king. So she was very sure of her position. This is what she said in her envious, just a little boy trying to get some affection from father. Queen Saruchi told Juvenal, my dear child, Vatsa, Navatsa, Nripati. This word Vatsa, what does Vatsa mean? But also means, oh, this is a very affectionate way. It's not used very much. If you say to your dear son, you say, oh, my dear calf, everyone's going to think, oh, a puggle or something. But it's actually, when you just even look at this picture, look at the relationship between the calf and mother there. There's so much love and affection. It's a very endearing term. Not used very much nowadays. So she told Dhruva Maharaj, Navatsya Nripati Dishnyam Bhavan Arodun Arati. Arati means deserve. You do not deserve to sit on the lap of your father on the throne. Surely, you are also the son of the king, and the king is listening to this, and he's not saying anything. And Dhruva is watching it and hearing it all. You do not deserve to sit on the lap of your father, the king. You're his son, but because you did not take your birth from my womb, In other words, being the son of the king is not enough qualification to sit on the throne. But you have the disqualification of taking your birth from the womb of someone else. And because of this, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap. It's a five-year-old voice he's talking to. My dear child, Bala, you are unaware, and this is so amazing, because indeed he was unaware. He, because the nature of a joint family, I've spoken to some devotees who've grown up in joint families. They said until they were like 10 years old, they didn't know which one was their father, which one was their mother. There was just so much love being exchanged. And everyone was showing loving affection. There was no short. Everyone, nowadays, people tend to grow up with a shortage of love. But there was that system, when it was working properly, there was so much affection. Your and Dhruva wasn't aware of the difference between Suniti and Suruchi. You are unaware that you were not born out of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. Attempt to do what? And the father was sitting on the throne, so she was taking it in a very, my son is going to be the king. You can't touch this throne. You'll never sit on the throne. She was taking it in a far-reaching way in the kingship. You should know your attempt is doomed to failure. You're trying to fill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. Now listen to what she says here, because in this envious, nasty chastisement of Dhruva Maharaj, she's going to speak something true and wonderful. Gold sometimes is found in a filthy place. We might not recognize it, and indeed, Dhruva isn't going to recognize it at this point, but later we'll understand. She said, Suruchi said, Tapas Aradhya Purusham. You have to perform austerity, tapasya. You want to sit on the throne? Is that what you want? Well, I'll tell you how you can do it. Tapasya Aradhya Purusham. You perform austerities to worship, to please the Parama Purusha, the Supreme Lord, Tasyaiva Anugrahena May. And then, by God's mercy, if you please Him, then you may be able to get your desire. And then, if you do get your desire, if He blesses you, if you please Him, if you perform your austerities and you please Him, then Gave Twam Sadayat Manam Yad Ichasi Vipassanam. If you want to fulfill your Icha, Yad Ichasi, your desire, Vipassanam, to sit on the Nripa Asana throne, king's seat, then Gave Twam Sadyat Manam, that you have to. Gave means the womb. You have to die. After you please the Lord, that's not even enough. You perform your austerities and your tapasya and you please the Lord and you get His mercy, then die. Then die and take your birth again in my womb. Then you can do it. Prabhupada's translation. If you would all desire to rise to the throne of the king, that you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. And then, when you are favored by Him because of such worship, you shall have to take your next birth in my womb. Die. So, what do you think of the way she spoke to her stepson? What do you think? To this little boy, what do you think?
Impolite, yes. Quite impolite.
Envy filled, nasty pride was there. So of course we wouldn't speak like that, but sometimes we think like that. So those were her words. Text 14. Now this is Dhruva's reaction. Very simple and very natural. Matu satnya sadrupti vidha. That he looked at his mother, and he heard the sharp words of his stepmother, and the word is vidha. In the word by words, Prabhupada translates vidha means pierced. Usually when we think of something piercing our heart, we think of a knife or a spear or some type of a sharp metal implement. But do we think of words having the capacity to pierce the heart? We don't think in that way. But actually, words, harsh words, cruel words are more pointed, and they can pierce the heart, and not only pierce the heart, but remain in the heart longer than a spear even. Because a spear, you can pull out. And okay, it's terribly painful, maybe even fatal. But if it's pulled out, you'll, it's there, you can see it, you know what the problem is. But when sharp words pierce the heart, they can stay in there our whole life. And we keep remembering them again and again and again and again and again and again for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And even they may even carry us into carry to our next life. So Dhruva's heart was pierced by the sharp words of his mother. Vasan Rusha Dando Hato Yatahi, that he became angry because he was a warrior. And that's one thing that we should understand about Dhruva. He was a warrior. He was a Kshatriya. He had the spirit of a warrior. When a warrior gets pierced, his fighting spirit, his anger arises. And he wants revenge. Dhruva, his heart pierced by the sharp, harsh words of his mother, envious words, became angry. Danda, like a snake being struck by a stick. And Dhruva began to breathe heavily. Kshatriya, warrior, prince, began to breathe heavily. And when he saw that his father was silent, this was it's like having a wound and then someone putting salt on the wound. His father didn't protect. She had her father, as we would say, wrapped around her little finger. The king. She had so much under control, and she dared to speak like this in front of him to the boy, and his father remained silent. And Dhruva, he looked at his father. He was angry, breathing heavily. His father did not protest. And Dhruva ran from the palace. And ran. Because when something difficult or bad happens to us, and it's out of our control, we go to where we can find some shelter. Shelter, yes. And this very much is about what this pastime is about. It's about finding shelter. Again, we might not be in the situation where this particular type of a thing happens to us, but in difficulty, we need shelter. We long for shelter. And the way the material world is set up is that there must be difficulty. There must be. It's part of the material world. Where did Dhruva go for shelter? As a young boy, he naturally went to his mother, crying. Text 15. He was so upset and so much crying that he couldn't speak. He was so emotional and tears and breathing. And when he reached his mother, his lips were trembling. What type of emotion causes trembling of lips? And he was crying, simultaneously angry and crying, because he was helpless. And he naturally expected his father to protect him. And he didn't. Deep trauma. He was crying grievously. And he went to his mother, and immediately his mother, Suniti, lifted her son onto her lap. He got a lap. He wanted his father's lap, but he got his mother's lap. While the palace, he couldn't speak. So she was saying, "What's wrong, Dhruva? What happened? What happened? What happened?" And he couldn't speak. He was so upset. And the palace residents, who had heard the sharp words, the harsh words of Saruchi, they related, they told him everything, her everything, in detail. So what does it mean to have a child? Well, one of the things it means is that whatever happens to them, you experience. Because here I am, and then here I am, we know, the Bhagavad Gita says, who are we? Yes, and the soul has a body, it's not that the body has a soul, but the soul has a body, and then there's a feeling, and everyone has the feeling, the experience of feeling I am, I exist, I am, this is who I am. So when we take that feeling of I am, and invest it in something, place it on something, it becomes mine. So because this is my body, I extend the feeling of I am to my body, so therefore it is my body. And I have a watch. So it is my watch. I have a car. So it is my car. I have a house. So it is my house. I have a family. So it is my family. It's taking the sense of I and impressing it upon something that is actually not I. Because obviously, this watch is not mine. Well, it's mine. I'm not going to. But this isn't me. Obviously, it's not me. Maybe it's not so obvious. Do I have a face? It has a face. It has two hands. I have two hands. Huh? It has three hands. But why do they call the second hand when it should be the third hand? You have date? Day-date? I don't have day-date. But anyway, clearly not me. But the sense of it, when I impress the sense of it's me upon something that isn't me, it becomes mine. So we do that with the family and all the possessions. And what it means to be in the material world is to really expand the sense of what's mine. expanding the sense of me into what's mine, and expand and expand and expand until we think this is my country, and something bad happens to my country, like India or something, when it loses to Pakistan in cricket. I mean, how painful is that? What would happen if you tried to get your PR and they asked you, or your Australian citizenship or something, they asked you if India was playing Pakistan in cricket, who would you root for? And they were going to write down, and if you said India, they wouldn't give it to you. Great internal pressure. But easy. Of course, India. What is the problem? But it is the sense, the impression of planting the sense of me upon something that isn't actually me. So Suniti also became greatly aggrieved, very distressed, because Dhruva's distress was so great. This incident was unbearable. She could not tolerate it. She began to burn as if she was in a forest fire. What an example! How much pain does being in a forest fire cause one? Unlimited pain, practically speaking. And Suniti experienced that. And in her grief, she became just like a burnt leaf. And she lamented. And she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright, lotus-like face filled with tears. And she began to speak to Dhruva. Now there's seven verses that describe the words of Suniti to Dhruva. Here's her first words, very valuable instructions for us. When something horrible happens to us or to someone we love, listen to what Suniti said. She is going to act as Dhruva's guru. She's going to instruct him so wisely, point him in the proper direction, so that ultimately he achieves perfection. Listen to what she said. She was also breathing heavily. She had taken on the same symptoms position as her son. And she did not know the factual remedy. She did not know the cure for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. She has spoken so terribly to you, but don't wish anything of inauspiciousness for others." "Because anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain." Now, anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. What did I just read? Raise your hand. If you can say it. No, I'm saying exact words almost. I'll read it again. Are you scared?
Is it action to reaction?
Yes, but the exact words. Please listen. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. Now listen to this. In the previous verse, Suniti, hearing what happened to her son Dhruva, the pain she felt, it was unbearable. She began to burn as if in a And she became like a burnt leaf and so lamented. Now take that. Don't wish for anything inauspicious for others, because anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain. What was the pain that Suniti felt? Experience. Wait, don't say it yet. What was the pain that Suniti was experiencing? By being burnt in a forest fire. And how did Suniti die? In a forest fire. This point is very heavy. Note it. Don't wish ill for others. Anything inauspicious. Anything. Even that they hurt their fingernail. Don't wish inauspiciousness for anyone else, okay? Because you'll have to suffer that same pain, even if it's selfish reason. Don't do it. Only wish good for others. That's what it means to be a devotee. That was our first instruction. Second verse. Text 18. Satyam. It is true. Sarutsa vitam bhavam ne. It is true. It is true what Saruchi has said. Because your father, the king, she said, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He neglects me. He feels ashamed to be with me. Therefore, it is a fact. You can't become the king. My relationship with your father is poor. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and being fed from her breast. By that milk, you have grown up. But my dear boy, she started by saying satyam, it is true. But this isn't all that was true. Suniti is going to capture the essence of the good, of the truth, even spoken by Sarikya in a harsh way. Whatever has been spoken, Atishta, you do that. What she has said to you, Atishta, Tata. Tata is another very affectionate way of addressing someone. My dear son, Atishta, just execute that, my dear son. Vimatsara, without being envious. You execute what your stepmother has said. Uktam samat sati yad avyadikam. And what was that you should do? And this is the essence or the beginning of the good advice. Sometimes the best advice comes to us in a most unexpected way. And we should learn to recognize it, especially if it's pointed out to us, to take it and then act on it. Aradhya adhutsada parapadma. What does that mean? Aradhya? You worship and please adhutsada, the transcendental Lord, his padapadma, his Lord's feet. And yaditsa say, and yadi, if you desire to sit on the throne, and listen to what she said, it's very interesting. If you desire, yadi ichasi, if you desire adi asana, to also sit on the throne with uttama yata. If you desire to also sit on the throne, not get rid of him so you can sit there,
But if you also, because that would have been very envious, and she wasn't envious, if you also desire to sit on the throne with your brother Uttama, you should do as your stepmother said and worship Aragya Dhokshaje Padapadma, the lotus feet of the Lord. Prabhupada's translation. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Saruji, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. It's true. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother Uttama, then give up your envious attitude. Very interesting. First, Saruji is called envious, and now Dhruva said, because envy is like a disease born of pride. And if someone acts enviously towards us, born out of their pride, there's such a tendency to react enviously, born out of my pride. How dare you speak to me like this? Don't you know who I am? We don't maybe say it out loud, but we react like that. You become very, very upset. So give up your envious attitude. She didn't say she should give up her envious attitude. She said you should give up your envious attitude. And immediately try to execute the instruction of your stepmother to worship the lotus feet of the transcendental Lord. Therefore, without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshiping the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Listen to Prabhupada's purport here. Short. Listen carefully. I'm going to ask you, it's only very, very short, but I'm going to ask you what you remember. So listen. The harsh words used by Saruji to her stepson were true, because unless one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve any success in life. Man proposes, and God responds. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, agreed with her co-wife's advice that Dhruva engage himself in the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indirectly, the words of Saruji were a benediction for Dhruva Maharaj, for because of the influence of his stepmother's words, he became a great devotee. So sometimes impetus, the impetus to push forward in devotional life or in any to find success may come in a very, very unexpected way. And one should really learn this art as Dhruva Maharaj is learning it. And of course he has some special qualities that we should also learn from Dhruva Maharaj, how he executes that. And we shall hear more about those tomorrow. So, but one of the arts of life is how to turn a difficult situation into a positive situation. And it all has to do with this. This is the foundational principle in doing that. The foundational principle in turning a negative into a positive is just this. It is surrender and taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Now, in the next two verses, Suniti is going to explain, Suniti is going to explain two examples of how Dhruva's family members, Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu, achieved the great success that they achieved. Brahma, of course, was Dhruva's, not father, because Dhruva's father was? Who was Dhruva's father? Was it Pitanapa? Uttanapad with his father, and Uttanapad's father was Swayambhuvamanu, and Swayambhuvamanu's father was Brahma. So your great grandfather, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so great. A great person can do great things. The greatest person can do the greatest things. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create the universe. Now that takes the greatest person to give you that benediction that you achieve those qualifications. Although he is unborn, Brahma is unborn, and the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life's air. So he's the most worshipable of the yogis. Now take a moment. Okay, what did that verse say in essence? Raise your hand if you remember what that verse said in essence. Don't say anything, just raise your hand. I just want to see how terrible a teacher I am. Okay, we have to read this one again. Please listen. I'm going to ask that same question. Didn't follow through on the last one, but this time I'm going to do it. I want to hear the essence of what this verse was. Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create this universe. Although he's unborn and the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the light air. In essence, what did that verse say? Spoken by Saliki. Raise your hand. Okay. Who would like to say what it said? Rose? Raise your hand. Yes. Anyone want to add anything? Yes? What? Not the purport, just the verse. What does the verse say?
It talks about whatever your desires are, you surrender to the Supreme Lord.
That's purport. What does the verse say?
Everything comes from
that's the Supreme purport. What does the verse say? Oh, excuse me. Did it say everything comes? Even the great yogi knows. What does the verse specifically say?
It's that it takes the greatest personality to the
that's what I said. Okay. What does the verse say? I'll have to one more time. You said it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualifications to create the universe. Let's break it down into smaller pieces. What did I just read? Yes. Yes, that. The Supreme Personality of God is so great that go to speak Lord Brahma qualifications to create the entire universe. Very good. I'm thinking. Finally, everyone. Otherwise, I was failing this test very badly. Although he is unborn, Brahma is unborn, and the chief of the living creatures, still, he's so unique and so powerful, but still he achieves his position because he was received the Supreme Lord.
She's trying to convince Dhruva that if you want something, you should look in the right place for that thing. There's no use looking in the garbage for jewels. I mean, there's a chance that there may be some there, but it's very unlikely. Don't look there. Look in the right place for the right thing. If you want the ability to gain something wonderful, you go to the Supreme Lord, the greatest. Look how powerful he is. He gave Brahma the power to create the universe. And even the greatest yogis who have no material desires still, they get what they want from him. And therefore they worship. He's the worshipable Lord of everyone, whether you're a Kamasa or a Kamadat, most of the Kamadat. So Prabhupada says in his purpose to become successful in any attempt. Now we all have so many desires in our hearts. We want this, we want that. Sometimes we have very strong devotional desires. Sometimes those are mixed with other desires for achievement and gaining things in this world for ourselves, our family members. And sometimes we're in great distress. We become moksha kamis. What does that mean? We just want to get free from the pain. Never mind serving Krishna, I just can't tolerate the pain anymore. Perhaps we go through all three sometimes of those. But it doesn't make a difference on one another. Whatever our desires are, we should go to the same place to have those desires fulfilled. So that's what Prabhupada said in the purport. To become successful in any attempt, one not only has to undergo severe penance and austerity, work hard, but also one must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now why does Prabhupada say one must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We see so many people who are successful who don't care a fig for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is Prabhupada's statement true or false? He says one must also be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do you think about that? You ask, you can take, you can do an opinion poll on the street, in Swanson Street, and ask the people, are you dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You? One, no. Maybe you'll get a biased person who will say yes. But what? Is Prabhupada speaking something true or not true? Or ideal? Well, how is it true? Okay. Bhakti Shastri. Yes, yes. Because if you ask everyone who wants to be a billionaire to raise your hand, then everyone raises their hand. Of course, not here. Here, if we ask everyone, the people who want to be billionaires, they only want it for the service of Radha Balabha. Actually, one time, when I first began chanting, we had heard that Prabhupada had said that yogis can produce gold. They know how to produce gold. So Rupanuga Prabhu, he thought, oh, how nice it would be to have a golden altar. What do you think about that? It would be nice, yeah? Yeah. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, Prabhupada, could you please tell me, you said that yogis know how to produce gold, so please tell me how to produce gold so that we can produce gold and have a golden altar for the deity. So Prabhupada replied by saying, yes,
There is a yogic system for doing this. First, you have to eat mercury. And of course, mercury can kill you. So you have to be a yogi. And then there is a way of past urine, after you ingest the mercury, this bell metal, the astagata, the metal that they make bells out of, and you pass urine on that. The yogi does that, and that turns into gold. This will process it. But he said, but don't try it. And then he said, but anyway, the tendency is when we get gold, is that we forget about Krishna. So don't try. Just be happy in Krishna. But yet, if one wants any success, unless it is sanctioned by Krishna, because the proportion of people who want to be very, very wealthy and the persons who are very, very wealthy is not based on desire and work alone, there is an additional element, upadrapta anumanta. Krishna is the permitter. If he doesn't sanction, it doesn't happen, no matter what. You can have a disease and take medicine, and unless the sanction is there, the medicine doesn't cure your disease. So what's the real cure of the disease? Is it the medicine or the sanction of the Lord? It's also the sanction of the Lord. So therefore, Prabhupada said, one must be dependent on the mercy of the personality of Godhead. The devotees are satisfied, happy, feel secure in being dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what he chooses to give me. And the non-devotees, they are not. They don't want to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be dependent on his mercy. So we usually think, oh yeah, the non-devotees are like that, but then if we think about it, am I actually satisfied with what Krishna gives me, or am I, is my heart a big storehouse of other desires, and I'm afraid that Krishna is not going to give me what I want unless something or another, not quite trusting Krishna? So we have to have a talk with ourselves sometimes and find out where we stand. So also must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This indication has been given to Dhruva Maharaj by his stepmother, and now it is confirmed by his own mother, Sunita. First example was Lord Brahma. Second example, he says, Manu achieved, Brahma achieved the power to create, and Manu achieved unlimited opulences. So Dhruva wanted, he didn't want to create a universe at this point. He wanted opulence. He was a warrior. His stepmother said, you cannot sit on the throne. And he was so angry. Oh yeah? I can't sit on the throne? Trembling and so angry. So Manu, greatest material wealth. Unlimited material wealth also by the mercy. And it's impossible to obtain what he obtained by worshipping the demigod. And then he achieved liberation also of his mama. So here, then he continues, which is, you know, a very wonderful verse, and you're all sitting so... Then she says, but so this is the 22nd verse, and then there's the 23rd verse, and then we all know that there's the 24th verse. Even without our computers and calculators and mobile phones, we know that. So she said, so
then we'll stop at 24, and we're already up to 23. She says, now she's giving her direct instruction. She's going to shift, or rather, she's going to give the instruction to Dhruva Maharaj that is going to shift his anger and his feeling of misfortune and give it a proper direction, a proper channel. So she says, my dear boy, you also should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Take shelter of the Lord who is very kind to his devotees. From Eva, Vatsa, Vatsa Asraya, my dear Vatsa, Eva, certainly, my dear Vatsa, you should certainly Vritya Vatsalam, Vatsa Asraya, Asraya, you should take shelter of this Lord who is Vritya Vatsalam. She called him Vatsa and said, the Lord is Vritya Vatsalam. He gives shelter to his Vatsa. We all know that Krishna loves his Vatsa so much. He loves his calves so much. So you become, my dear Vatsa, you come to me for shelter because I am your mother, but you go to Vritya Vatsa, Bhakta Vatsa. You be his calf and take shelter from of him. Paricharya Vishva, that he is so powerful that everyone in the universe is worshipping his lotus feet, requiring their qualification. Vritya Vatsala Mamukshapi Mriga Padabja Padatim. This is the process. You take shelter of his loaded feet. Think about what you desire. Do you want that? Well, if you do want that, if you do desire it, there is one place, Suniti says, that is so great and so wonderful, that if we go back to that place, everyone desires to be satisfied. And we don't, and it's not that Krishna's lotus feet are small and we have to push others away so we can get our spot, our place as calves. No, they are great, they are wonderful. Although the Supreme, you should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. He loves his devotees. Atma Prajanta Vasanvata. Person seeking liberation. There's one verse in Bhakti Samhita Sringling, that's a devotion, that says that Krishna, he doesn't take offense. Even if we act offensively to him, he actually doesn't take offense. And even if we offer something small to him, he sees it as very great. And when his enemies approach him with enmity, he doesn't act with enmity or envy towards them. Kamvadaram Sharanam Brijima. What a wonderful Lord. This is the one we want to take shelter of. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death, they always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate ceaselessly and carefully to these instructions, because it is the nature of every living entity, every soul, to have desires.
the way to stop desiring is not to exist. There's no other way. Even if we think, oh, I'm tired of all these desires harassing me, now I'm going to desire not to have any desires. It's still a desire. We must desire. If we want our desires fulfilled, just be purified. Because without being purified, becoming amal, free from contamination, we won't be able to do the next step. And that next step is place the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart. He is very kind to you. Take shelter of him. Place his lotus feet. Situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead within your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. It's a shame the universe is yours. That's what you want. Now, I'll read, before reading Prabhupada's purport, I'd like to read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because it will tell you here that Vishwanath states that I found difficult to understand, but Prabhupada explains it clearly in his own purport. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, and Prabhupada, we can see, very much imbibed the mood of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport. Listen. Because what was the first thing that she told him? You take shelter of the Lord because
he is so great and very kind
to his devotees. He is Vritya Vatsal. Vritya means to those who seek his protection. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the Lord is affectionate to his servant. He will have, because Yuna's come to him as his shelter. He's come to her, his mother, naturally as his shelter. But she said, you go to him, he will have more affection for you. And who in this world has more affection for us? Now in crazy Kali Yuga, it doesn't always work this way. But who will have more affection for you, his servant? He will have more affection for you, his servant, than the affection of millions of mothers like me. This is what she's saying. You go to him. You come to me, we go to shelter where we know we're going to be received. Well, that they won't turn us away like Tharuchi turned Dhruva away, like the king by his not say anything turned Dhruva away. We go for shelter where we will be taken and accepted and given shelter. So we go. Dhruva went to his mother, but she's saying, you become his servant. Because his affection for his servants is greater than millions of mothers. Millions of mothers like you. You will not encounter a trace, the smallest element of suffering. You will take shelter of the Lord. And that is the path of the Lord whose lotus feet are sought after by everyone who is aspiring, who desires liberation. But it is not easy to obtain it. But take that shelter. Take that shelter. And having taken it,
you should take his lotus feet and place them in your mind, which has attachment for nothing else. Worship the Lord, fixing him in the purified mind by bhakti. And then Bhishma says, so fix the Lord's lotus feet in your, purify your heart, and fix his feet in your heart by service. Without anything else being fixed in your heart. We may do so many things, but what is actually in our heart? What do we actually desire? What is our mind actually focused on? He said, because of the Lord's greatness, his power, and his kindness, more kind than millions and millions of mothers, you worship him. Keep those feet undeviatingly, fully, with no other attack. Keep them in your heart by bhakti. And that is the only way to do it. By devotion, by love. Loving service. Seva. Why did Dhruva run to his mother?
Because of love.
But then Vishwanath said, you should do this. Since a five-year-old boy is not qualified for karma yoga. You cannot perform karma yoga, so you should do this in bhakti yoga. So when I read that, I was thinking, well, bhakti yoga is higher than karma yoga, and if he's not qualified for something inferior, then how will he be able to do something superior? The Prabhupada will explain this in his purport, which we shall read. And I don't. The only way I can read it quickly, not quickly, but without going back and reading it 5 times or 6 times, because I'm not sure anyone heard anything, is if you all please, even though it's, I know it's late and everything, but if you all please try to listen. It's very sweet. The system of bhakti yoga described by Queen Suniti to her son is the standard way of self-realization. Everyone can continue in his constitutional occupational duties and at the same time keep the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. This was also instructed by the Lord himself to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, go on fighting, but keep me within your mind. Anyone know the Sanskrit of that? Mam anusmara yudhyacha. This should be the motto. What does motto mean? Simple saying that we keep saying over again that drives us, that drives our life in that sense. This should be the motto of every honest man and lady. What was that? Should be the motto? Mam anusma, remember Krishna. Do your duty. She said, Queen Suniti, this should be the motto of every honest person who seeks perfection in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada didn't say, this should be the motto of some honest people who seek perfection in Krishna consciousness. Or, he said, every. In this connection, Queen Suniti advised her son that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhaktivatsa, which indicates that he is very kind to his devotees. She said, you came to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother. But I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help his devotees. Queen Suniti also stressed that the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but it is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated by her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible. He was only a small child of 10 years old, and it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of Karmakanda. But by the process of Bhakti Yoga, even a child of less than 11 years old, or anyone of any age that can be purified. That is the special significance of Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, she advised him not to accept the worship of any demigod or any other process, but simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essence of Bhakti. And Dhruva will teach us this very soon, following the instruction of Sarupchi, who said it in sarcasm, and Suniti, who said it with bhakti. And Narada Muni will give it the practical shape, the instructions, the practical shape, so we'll know how to do it. Simply take to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't worship the demigod. Don't follow any process. Surrender. Give yourself. Become his vatsa. And the result would be all perfection. Because as soon as one places the Supreme Personality of Godhead within one's heart, everything becomes easy and successful. What do you think of that purple? What do you think? Yeah. What do you think?
I think one should give up himself to the Supreme God. Godhead.
You heard it very carefully. Thank you. What did you think? What did you think of the purport?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have unflinching faith on Supreme Personality of Godhead.
If I did notice that word. Yes.
So all our desires could be fulfilled and it will fulfill in such a way that we don't have to do it again. It will be finishing forever. So then we can go back.
Since you said if, yes, let me pardon you, but I'm going to. What happens if we don't have unflinching faith? What should we do? What happens if we'd like to have unflinching faith, but we don't quite have it yet? This question we have to know the answer to for ourselves. We have to learn the answer. What should I do? I may not be on the level where I can fully surrender myself. What should I do? But the answer, of course, is in the verse that you quoted before. Akama sava kama va. Most of the time,
also, that you should worship Krishna. Don't look anywhere else. You may be a kama, I mean, having no devotional, no material desires, only devotional desires. You may be sarva kama. My heart is like the dumping ground of all material desires, because I one of the movies and watch television, explore the internet continuously, and I go shopping all the time and whatever, and so many desires. My mind is like a funnel, and it all comes into my mind. It could be like that, or it could be pure, or it could be moksha kamis, udaradi. It could be moksha kamis who just want to get out of this miserable material world. So painful. And I've seen this one die and this one get sick. And I've seen wars and I've seen this person get crushed by this problem and that by that. I don't have anything to do with it. I just want to be free from it. But whatever our situation is, to reina bhakti yogina, yajeta. Dhruva Maharaj is practically, Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, the story is like a purport of that verse. Because he was so Tivrena. Oh, what does Tivrena mean? Huh? Intense. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that word, but that's better than what I was thinking of. Intense. Intense surrender. Focus. Intense. Powerful. Worship of Krishna. And he was sarvakama like anything. He had so many desires for it. But the example is given us in Ganga. Maybe I'll speak about the verse tomorrow. Tivrena means the Ganga at Gomukh. Gangotri. You've seen the Ganga at Gomukh and Gangotri. I didn't see it when I was there. Is it you, babe? In Gomukh? It's cold, yes? Yeah? It's so cold, the water of the Ganga is so cold in Gomukh, you don't know whether it's cold or hot. But you know you want to get out. And there are huge, huge icebergs in the water. It's cold. It's very cold, in fact. So worship Krishna, whatever our situation is, just do it. Just do it. Because Dhruva did it, because Manu did it, because Brahma did it, because Prabhupada did it, because so many nice devotees did it, so many, and Rupa Goswami did it, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did it. Well, I don't trust anyone. I only trust myself. The problem is big like that, because if we only trust ourselves, and since we know better than anyone else how untrustworthy we are, as the saying goes, even when if a doctor treats himself, he has a fool for a patient. You know that saying? The doctor prescribes for himself, he has a fool for a patient. You know that thing? You never heard that before. In other words, we know better than anyone else how untrustworthy we are, and how devious our minds are, how tricky, and how unreliable, and capable of any crazy thing, and yet we say we trust ourselves and don't trust anyone else. And then there, on the other hand, there is Srila Rupa Goswami. On the other hand, there is who was Raghunath Das Goswami, who was wealthy practically beyond our estimation at this point. He was just begging, trying attain the lotus feet, giving up everything to attain the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and eventually did it by the mercy of Mercy of, I think.
my dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate what does mitigate mean? Reduce or remove your distress. I don't find anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the face and the pleasure of the goddess of fortune, but the goddess of fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. One more verse.
We won't be supportive and not very wonderful.
So that's what she told Dhruva. And then Dhruva, this is my family speaking, Evam Sanjalp become Matur. Thus, after hearing Akarnya Artha Agama Vacha, after hearing these purposeful words from his mother, after hearing these very, very pointed and purposeful words from his mother that they exchanged and spoke together, Saniyam Yat Manatmanam, that Saniyamya, he was very upset, but he began to place his mind fully under control. And he walked right out of his father's house. He,
listen to what Prabhupada said.
Both the mother and the son were lamenting Dhruva Maharaj's having been insulted by his stepmother and his father's not having taken any steps on this issue. But mere lamentation is useless. One should find out the means to mitigate one's lamentation. Thus both mother and son decided to take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, because that is the only solution to material problems. It is indicated in this connection that Dhruva Maharaj left his father's capital city to go to a secluded place to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Dhruva said, well, where can I find him? You say I should take shelter of the Lord. Where can I find him? My dear son, when great sages want to find the Lord, they usually go to the forest. So Dhruva left his father's capital city to go to a secluded place to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the instruction of Prahlad Maharaj also that if one is seeking peace of mind, he should free himself from all contamination of family life and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by going to the forest. To the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this forest is the forest of Vrindavan, or Vrindavan. And if one takes shelter of Vrindavan, under Vrindavanishwari, Srimati Radharani, certainly all the problems of his life are solved very easily. So Dhruva, he heard the instructions, and amazingly enough, he acted on them. Immediately. But he didn't know anything about the Lord. He was only a little boy. What's going to happen to him in the forest? Will a tiger eat him? Or maybe an elephant will step on him? Or poisonous snake, like a viking. What will happen to this unprotected little boy when he goes to the forest? To find Krishna, to find God. What will happen? You shall hear the next episode, the next part of it tomorrow.
Is that all right? Do you have a question?
Thank you very much. You all listened very, very carefully. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Do we know who Dhruva Maharaj was in his previous life? Did he manage to perform this powerful austerity at the age of 5?
Some of us knew, but some of us, the same of us who knew, forgot. Unfortunately. I remember a little bit. He was a powerful Brahmana. But he had a friend who was a king, who had lots of opulences, and he was poor. And he started, if only I could, if only I had this, and if only I had that, if only that. I saw this with myself, that,
because when I was young,
I could run and run, and never get tired of actually speaking. 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers, I could run and run, and now I could barely walk. So when you get older and you start looking at the young boys, they're running and running and running, and you start thinking, oh, I remember when I could run. Oh, and then the next thought is, only if I could run fast again. Oh, it'd be so nice to be able to run. And immediately the seed of that desire to be able to run again is planted in the heart. So Krishna says, oh, you want to be able to run again like a little boy, a young boy? Okay. Okay, we can arrange that. What size legs would you like? What size feet would you like? We're taking orders right now. And then that's one type of a thing that happens, that we lose when we're older what we had when we're young. Only if I could have hair again. Or this time I would like blonde hair or something like that. Or, long hair. I never can grow my hair long. Oh. And then the other thing that happens is, start thinking of all the things that you didn't have that others had and you wished you had. The ability to play harmonium, to sing, to Sanskrit, to be wealthy, to have this, to have that, to have 2 houses, 7 cars, a Mercedes, a Rolls Royce, followers, this, that. Whatever it is that we think that we didn't have, that we saw that others have, that we imagine made them happy, those desires come to the heart too. More seeds for our next birth. So Dhruva Maharaj in his last life was a Brahmana. Somehow by association, being friends with a king's son, he wanted material happiness, and he was born in a king's family. But he was carrying some pointedness of ability and focus. And of course, this was a long time ago when people weren't so disturbed in mind. When everyone in Kali Yuga is upadutaha, everyone's mind is flickering and disturbed by all the stimulation. That we've grown to accept of life and advancement. In Cantonese is called Hongfuchi, which means Confucius. And Confucius was like a Brahmin sage who was always looking for a king to advise, who would accept his advice how to rule the kingdom. He was brilliant. And he said that if I was advising a king who was listening to me, people would be so satisfied that people would be living in a village and they would be able to hear the sound of the dogs barking in the village next to them, but they would have never even have bothered to visit. So he said this, that people would be so satisfied in their village they wouldn't even need or desire to walk anywhere else. But who would be satisfied like that today? Today we'd think, oh, this poor person, he's never been outside of his village. He doesn't have a car, he's never even been to the big city. He doesn't even have a mobile phone maybe, you know, or the internet. How primitive, how unfortunate. That means our heart is becoming more, our consciousness becomes more and more ripe for seeing all the things we don't have. And we want, and our mind is always disturbed thinking about all the things we want. Only if I had that, if only I had that, if only if I had that. So that's how we put in the seeds in our consciousness for our next birth. What is it that I didn't have in this life that I think that if I had it, I'd be happy? What is it that I wish that I had at one point that didn't lose and wish I hadn't lost? Well, Krishna still comes. Was given to us if that's what we want. He's going to give Dhruva a kingdom. So everything is based on our desire. So what is it that we want? Something to think about. What is it that I actually want? How about a credit card that instead of spending money, whenever I spent money, they sent the bill to my enemies. He was the one responsible. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Any other questions or comments? Yes.
What does Shlokova mean when he says an honest person with his Shlokova?
He said an honest person. There was a second part of that sentence that I didn't emphasize as much. Every honest person who's a devotee, basically. This should be the motto of every honest person who seeks perfection in Krishna consciousness. So if we set the Prabhupada, what about the honest people who don't seek perfection in Krishna consciousness? What would Prabhupada say? I heard someone say it back there. What would he say?
They are rascals.
They are rascals. Yes, immediately. They are rascals. They are not honest. They are rascals. They are rascals. Yes? You would say that? You would definitely say they are rascals. You said immediately we divide them into two categories. If they are devotees, and if they're not devotees, they are rascals. Immediately, there are only two categories. But Prabhupada, how about somebody who's somewhere in between? They are rascals. Yes, Prabhupada.
You are a rascal.
Yes, Prabhupada. Yes, we think we're the proprietors of so many things, but are we actually the proprietors of it? Say if I think I'm the proprietor of, you already put your MP3 player, but if I think that I'm the proprietor of your MP3 player, but then I try to leave with it, I cannot. So when we try to take all the things that we think we're the proprietor of when we leave this world, we have to leave everything behind, which indicates that it actually has nothing to do with us. We're not the owner of it, not the proprietor of it.
So therefore we're thinking that something is mine that isn't mine, so it's dishonesty. Rascal. It's amazing if you think about it, and confronting if you think about, if you define what is actually yours by what you can take with you when you die, and then take that conception of what's yours and compare it to what you usually think is yours. Compare that if you want to become humble. So that means we're dishonest and restless. So therefore, there to properly place the Lord in the heart, as Suniti said in Prabhupada's echo, that we have to become very detached from these things in the material world. We need to hear a lot. We have to understand what is really ours. You know, what is worthwhile? What do we think? What do we think if we had in this world, then we would be happy? Possessing it, being able to hold it for some time and think it's mine, because we know it. We're not going to be able to hold it forever. So what is it that we think that if I could hold it for some time, then I'll be happy and satisfied? So to confront these things in an honest way with knowledge of right, what's of some philosophical knowledge, means that we'll take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And especially when we confront the disparity, the difference between what we should be and what we are, then we'll take shelter of the Lord, because he accepts even a little service. Patam pushtam palam toyam. Singular, lead slower. Vritya Vatsala. That's why we want to take shelter of him too, because he's Vritya Vatsala. Because if he's just going to be fair and give us what we deserve, then we'll look for another Lord. Because I prefer not to get what I deserve personally. We need someone who's going to reciprocate with great affection, who's more kind than millions of mothers. Millions of mothers whose bhava grahi janardana. What does bhava grahi janardana mean? Essence of what? Of what? Of the essence of the mood that you're making the offering in. Despite everything else, not that we should allow ourselves to be sloppy in our devotional service and not sincere, because that won't work either, because he's also very expert at he's in the heart. He knows exactly what we're up to, what our plan is, what our scheme is. And then he'll reciprocate. But we should try to offer something sincerely. Try to sincerely do some service to him. Please accept it. Please accept it. It will be your kindness to me if you accept this offering. See me as your butter. Please. Any question or comment? Later? Another question, perhaps? Are you hungry yet?
No.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
You're talking about how when somebody is in distress, they're looking for shelter. And you're talking about how, it says in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna is giving so much millions of mothers. Millions of mothers. So
that's what Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, they commented, expanded the mood of Suniti's words in that way.
So recently I was a bit distressed, so I rang my parents,
yes.
And you were just saying that Srila Prabhupada said that people who are not devoted are rascals. So I was thinking even then, I'm speaking to rascals, but all the same, I need somebody to talk me through what I'm going through. So how can we really take shelter of Krishna Chaitanya when we may need to actually talk with someone who, like you were saying, can definitely won't judge us, like parents usually just accept if you bring them, they will talk to you and help you. And also, even though they may be rascals, they may be materially experienced, so they can actually help you in a material sense, like organize yourself or plan things to solve the problem. So maybe you can come on.
That's it. You answer that.
The question seems to indicate that how can I
in the microphone
find somebody who I can talk to who give me an answer? If I go to Krishna, I want to hear him. I want to hear the practical response.
The point that I noted was in the question was that sometimes you have a practical situation and you want a practical answer, and you might pray and you might search Shastra backwards and forwards for some kind of a direction, but your mind is confused, and where do you get that answer from? And generally speaking,
But I wasn't so practical, I was distressed, there were tears, it wasn't a matter of I'll go to the temple and pray, it was a matter of I need someone to help me now, I can't wait 6 months or 30, I have to speak with somebody now to calm me down.
Speak with somebody.
Yeah, and give you some
reassurance. In other words, a prayer appears to be passive. When you're distressed, you want someone to speak with, is that right?
Yeah, and give advice and so on, yeah. Mm.
So what do you do then? Hand it back to you. Because I've experienced that also.
Would you accept everything your mother said, regardless of what she said?
No.
Okay, so you're not fully taking shelter of her. Yes? If she said, your problem, and you wouldn't be in so much distress, if she was really a rascal, she would have told you so many things that would have been completely against the things that you hold dearest in your life. And the things that you value most in your life. So she wasn't a complete rascal, obviously, but she's just not an exalted devotee. So, first of all, I would say how wonderful it is if our parents are actually devotees, how fortunate we are if our parents are actually devotees. So, then we move to this question. We need someone to take shelter of. So when you're talking to your mother, but you're not taking shelter of her because you're not accepting everything that she's going to say, you have a different standard, right? So who is really your shelter when you're talking to your mother?
Krishna.
So your own standard, which is a devotional standard, which comes from Guru, Prabhupada, Krishna, like that. So it's not that you're actually taking shelter of her. So we do have to be careful of these kind of things in the sense of we should know really where our shelter is. So where really is your shelter? Not that you have, don't answer that right now. So we want to make our shelter so deep, so deep in Krishna that we can turn to him at any time and we'll be and he'll respond. Sadami Buddhiyogam Sam Yina Mamudyanate. But what's the line right before that? Tesham Satatam. What does Satatam mean?
Yuktanam. Wait, Yuktanam. Yes, so if we always take shelter of Krishna and devotional service and bhajatam, worship him with priti, porvakam, with great loving devotion, then didami buddhiyogam. So we're not maybe on the highest level yet, but we should know that that highest level is indeed the ultimate standard. That we don't find any other shelter except for Krishna. Whether they're rascals or non-rascals, we turn only to Krishna. The issue isn't like demigods, they're not rascals, they're devotees. But still, the injunction was not to take shelter of the demigods when you have needs. So the issue isn't rascal or non-rascal. The issue is, where is my shelter really? And this is a big topic, and it's too late to talk about it. It may come up tomorrow or the next day. This is the issue of Krishna consciousness. The primary issue is to make our shelter fully, irrevocably, and only at Krishna's lotus feet. That's what we want to do. And then, for practical things, you know, like if we're hungry, or if we don't just pray to Krishna, you know, you go out and plant a few seeds and wait for them to grow, and, you know, cook something, grow them, you know, like that, and then offer them. You act practically, you do something. But inside, your theoretical, philosophical, spiritual, devotional basis is essence is on Krishna. And then practically you act practically. You don't move your essence. And you didn't move your essence. You didn't fully take shelter. Because you've already given yourself to Krishna. That's the reality. Is that all right, or you? Okay. One o'clock. What time is prasad?
2:00.
So the first question is, because we have an hour to think about life, etc. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.